This is Democracy Optimist. Here's your host, Professor Joshua Douglas of the University of Kentucky Rosenberg College of Law.
What does it mean? To be American.
Everyone likes warm cookies, and we all want a better democracy. Why not put those two ideas together? That's what the organization Warm Cookies of the Revolution does in Denver, Colorado. They recognize that people are busy. We work a lot. We take care of our families. Who has time for a public meeting that sounds boring and serious? Warm Cookies of the Revolution promotes civic health by creating an enjoyable and engaging atmosphere to discuss social issues that are critical to people's lives. And they bring warm cookies to every event. Here to discuss how it all works is Evan Weissman. Evan is the founder of Warm Cookies of the Revolution, which he refers to as a civic health club. He has won several awards for his efforts, which have engaged more than 1 million people. Evan, welcome to Democracy Optimist.
Hey, thank you. I'm really excited to be here today with you.
So I guess even though this is, over the radio, I have to ask if you brought warm cookies to our conversation.
I'm currently eating them right now. Yes.
There we go. So why warm cookies? How did that all start?
Yeah. So we started it. I mean, if I'm being honest, the start was because I saw lots of people who did lots of things with their limited amount of time. For me, it was often in sports bars. I would have incredible conversations with just regular people, and they would go to places that were unexpected. We'd be watching a game, but that would bring up a lot of issues. And I realized, man, none of these people are at city council meetings or at budget meetings or at zoning meetings. And why is that? And the kind of light bulb there was people are busy and they spend their time and their money on what they care about. And if there's anything left over, they spend their time and their money on their necessary things. And if there's anything left over, then they spend it on what they like to do. And so I figured instead of trying to convince people to get involved in something that sounds horrible, what if we made interesting things that they wanted to attend, and then we kind of embedded it with civic issues? So that's kind of where it started, was let's make something fun. Let's make something that people actually want to do. And then there's an assumption, which is always right, which is that people care about the things that are closest to them, like their roads and their water and their kids' schools.
So you refer to this as a civic health organization. That kind of sounds like, you know, going to the gym for working out, but doing it for civic purposes. But what do you mean by that term? I mean, beyond having cookies at your events, how do you make it not feel like you're telling people to eat their vegetables?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So when we say civic health club, it's exactly that. It's like you go to the gym, you want to see results. You want to feel like your muscles are getting bigger and you want to see it. And we want to see that in our communities. You want to see things change if you want them to change. The way that we do it, yeah, we're pretty much the opposite of eat your vegetables. We take very seriously play and very seriously making things fun. So any time we approach any issue, any topic, whether that's something like housing or taxes, anything that we do that could be really, really boring, we, because all of us are artists, we come at it from a weird angle, from an angle of like, how can we get just a regular person involved in this? How can we make this sound as exciting as watching Netflix or going to an NFL game? And that's kind of our obsession. So everything that we do is specifically not eat your vegetables. It's let's do this fun thing. Eat these cookies. Eat these incredible cookies that you know you're going to want, both real and metaphorically. And then we kind of, like I said, we embed it with these civic issues and let people know, well, what can they do? What can I do to affect change or preserve what I love in my community?
And this is just a little aside, but I love the story about the cookies themselves. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how you get to having cookies at every event of yours.
Yeah. So, we started 13 years ago. And in the beginning, we, you know, a couple people maybe made some cookies, but we also bought them from some local places. And then a guy who had come, a volunteer, he said, hey, it's in your name. You got to have good cookies. And this is how I want to give back. So I'm going to bake cookies for you. And he has now for 13 years baked cookies for almost everything we've done. And this is hundreds and hundreds of different programs. He bakes classic cookies. He bakes vegan cookies and he bakes gluten-free cookies. And they're incredible. And you know, with interesting, they're not just all chocolate chip. They're, you know, like a chocolate red wine and olive oil, you know, blueberry cream. And he bakes them for everything. His name is Isaiah Busef. He would not want me to say his name on the radio, but I'm going to because he deserves the credit.
That's really cool. But this gives me, you know, looking at your website, which is really dynamic, it makes me think maybe, you know, Warm Cookies of the Revolution is just another liberal group trying to give liberals another space to make themselves feel better in the political environment. Am I wrong about that?
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say you are. This is an organization that is by and for people and run by artists and residents. And so this is for people who've been left behind. This is by and for people who have been ignored or kind of pushed to the margins. It is really, there isn't a political left or right to it outside of personal bias that, you know, I may have, and it may come into any programming, but we're in so many different places in rural, urban, and suburban areas. And we have so many different people involved that, this is like, you know, we have something called the Huddle for sports fans. That's for sports fans. We have stuff that's made by guys in, lowrider car clubs. We do stuff with dancers. So we start with culture. And so who is involved is, that's who it is. It's all those people who feel very left out by elections and by voting and by the kind of the one place where most people are told, hey, this is how you're a citizen. This is how you're civic, is by voting. And then maybe after that, like, you can write a letter to an elected official. So we're for all the people who feel like that is not either not enough or doesn't address their concerns, and specifically the 364 days out of the year that are not about voting and elections. And so that's a huge swath of people. And so it really isn't the liberal conservative thing at all.
As someone who's focused on voting rights so much in my career, I find it interesting that you're focused more on the time after Election Day. Why is that? Tell us about that approach. Also, throw in a little conversation about the election night dance party that you have and what comes after that.
Yeah. I mean, I think for most people, even this idea of civic, it means very little to most people. You maybe took a class at some point and you know it has something to do with elections or voting or government or something. But what we're told is that it's about voting. And for most people, although there's a lot of people who can't vote just legally, then you have people who voted before and they saw no change and they're not even doing it. But for most issues, these things are actually very local and you can actually have a big say on the things that to be civic means to feel ownership and to be a steward of the things that you own in your community, which is the water and the sidewalks and the jail and the library and the schools, et cetera. Like, we own all of these things and you can affect change 364 days out of the year other than voting day and then election day. You can get involved in many, many ways, but many of us are not taught that we can, or it's extremely difficult to go somewhere on a Tuesday at noon into a building that's a scary building, you know, that we've only been to because it's where we've gone to court. And it's not in our language, maybe, and we don't have childcare. There's a lot of barriers to entry. But if we can educate people about this, then people can find out how to get involved and that actually you can make change in a really big way. So we focus on that because there is so much money and time and energy that is put towards voting. That's very important and people do a good job with it, but there's very little put towards the other 364 days out of the year. And so the election night dance party, as you asked about, we've done that a few times and it's essentially, we market it for months. We say, look, come to this party. It is after you voted, after the polls have closed. we're going to party. We're going to have a dance party. It's going to be a lot of fun because that, man, that's intense to get kind of spammed, text messaged and have all these commercials at us for months and people telling us what we have to do. So let's celebrate that we did that. And let's also know that we're going to have to get to work the next day. And so one of the things we do is very simple. We have commitment cards and we have a little fake USPS mailbox. And we tell people, here, write down what you commit to doing in your community in the first 100 days of this new administration. And we mail it to people a couple months later as a reminder of what they were thinking about at this really fun party. So our whole thing is you vote every day. You can vote every day, and we will show you how, and we'll make it fun and joyous.
We're speaking with Evan Weissman, the founder of Warm Cookies of the Revolution in Denver, Colorado. You just mentioned the mantra, vote every day. You actually have a children's book, or kind of a book for adults that looks like a children's book, that is up on your website, and you can get physical copies of it. Tell us about that book, the origin of it, and how it all came about, and what it is.
Yeah, we started with actually a different book first, which was a lot more kind of artistic and was it was photos and a poem. And that's one way to engage certain people. And we really enjoyed this children's book idea. So then we did this second one called Vote Every Day. And the idea, you know, these hard books that you read to babies, basically the concept there is most people see them and their brains go, oh, this will take 30 seconds. And so we put them, we place them in DMVs and libraries and community centers in surprising places. And we have them translated into 8 different languages. And then people can also buy them at pay what you want pricing. And what the idea behind it is, it's just getting across this notion that we do own our communities, that we need to show up whether we want to or not, if we want something to be a certain way, because the decisions are going to be made regardless. And it's a reminder. There's links in it, QR code links to people who have gotten together and really made some incredible headway and changes as kind of civic actors. And it shows that we have more power than we think we do when we get together. And we certainly have more power that we can see and taste and smell on an everyday basis than we do voting once a year, once every 4 years. So that's the idea. It's just we get it to regular people's hands to remind them of this.
Now, you've spoken a lot about art and culture. You talked about the poem that turned into a book. You talked about a dance party. Why is art and culture so important to your approach to being a civic health club?
In a very practical way, pretty much any organization that I've ever seen around the country that has the word civic in it, for the most part, is they're probably doing incredible work and they're probably writing interesting things, but they're often not actually engaged with regular people. Like, that is a nerdy sounding word. And it is often not connected to regular people's lives. And so what is like I mentioned earlier, where we put our time. And so culture is how we pass the seasons, the foods that we use to celebrate. These are the things that are really important in our lives. And it's the thing that people really connect with. Art is a way of seeing things in a way that you maybe wouldn't have before. But for the most part, these are the things that are fun. These are the things that are interesting to us. And these are the things that if you ask most people what you've done in the past year, have you been to a music show? Have you gone shopping? Have you been to a church? Have you gone to a sporting event? These types of questions, most people say yes to. Have you been to a zoning meeting? Have you been to a water quality meeting? Have you been to a school board meeting? Most people would say no. And so we use art and culture to get people to then say, hey, here are ways that you can be involved, because everyone cares about that stuff. So it's important. Also, the other reason I'd say is we're not going to get to the future that we want if we don't have spaces to envision it. And if we don't have places where we can gather with other people who we either agree with or disagree with to say, what do we want for this community? What could it be? And how do we overcome these barriers, these very real challenges that we have? You're not going to do that unless you can envision it and work with other people to do it.
Tell us one of your favorite success stories, or maybe one of the projects that Warm Cookies has seen to fruition and demonstrated, hey, this model actually works.
The best success story that we have, outside of a lot of anecdotal stories that are really incredible, is we had a group of residents in Denver who very much wanted something called participatory budgeting. Now, this is the most boring sounding thing you could imagine. Participatory budgeting, just you almost are asleep when I say those words. But at its best, it can be very revolutionary. It's essentially where neighbors and neighborhoods decide a portion of the city budget. And so we had residents who wanted to do it. We had a mayor who did not want to do it and city council who did not want to do it. So we organized in very creative ways using some essentially sculptures almost that were in suitcases, one of which was a Rube Goldberg machine that sort of showed people like, hey, this is how you're usually engaged with the government. You kind of put something in and then it does all these crazy things. The chicken lays the egg and hits this and hits that, until what we would do is print out a piece of paper that said, thank you for your comments and concerns. That's how most people feel about those processes. And then the second one that we have would show people what a participatory budgeting system would look like. They would have control over it. It would be fun. They would need expert help as well. And so it was a physical, artistic, creative way of getting people to understand this process. And then we trained city staff to show them, hey, this process is going to make your life easier as well. And then we were training lots of residents. And then the last thing was we needed to get more people to know about it. And we got a lot of press by creating, for a few weeks, we had an installation in a two-story garage that was wild. I mean, it was absolutely wild. And so we got all this news coverage. We could not be ignored. And ultimately, this was after a couple of years of pushing, we were successful. And the city of Denver adopted participatory budgeting. It's now starting its third round. And they also hired our residents to do community engagement. And that's been the biggest success in their program, is who's involved. It's the people who are not typical civic decision makers. It's many people who are poor, many people who are, the ages are even different because the community set it up. So you have young people, you have people in the county jail who are voting. It's a very different system, and it's been very successful.
So how can people in other parts of the country use the Warm Cookies model? I know, you know, where I am in Kentucky, we've got the organization Civic Lex, which we've talked a lot about on this show. I know you know them. People listening anywhere else, how can they use the same model to start something similar in their own communities?
Yeah, this is something, you know, we're in the process. It's been 13 years and we're finally getting around to responding to that question in a better way than we had, which people would often contact us and be like, this is cool, how can I do it? And we were like, I don't know. We're not Chipotle. We don't know how to do that. But right now we're in the process of creating basically toolkits and kind of an online space where people can trade and swap approaches. But we have over 40 different programs that can be replicated. And so people are welcome to try to, take what we have or talk with us and start kind of their own civic health club if they're interested. But even if it's not in that big of a way, I think if people gather with their neighbors and get together essentially with the mindset of how do I experiment the same way that chefs do with their ingredients or scientists do with their beakers and chemicals, how can I do that with my neighbors? How can we experiment with what it would look like if we controlled decision-making in our communities? And how can we get more people involved? So whatever the fun, interesting culture that you live around that gets people out, do that and bring them in. And don't do it in a sneaky way. Be real clear about it. And I think people will love to rise to that occasion.
Now, you strike me as someone who's particularly optimistic about the power of local engagement and about democracy in general. Of course, this is a show called Democracy Optimist. What makes you so optimistic?
I might take one quibble with that word, and this is my own little thing, is that I'm not as much someone who thinks about optimism and pessimism, because I think of those words as they leave out me. They leave out action, where I usually use hope or fear, but this is just a tiny little thing. But I think of like, I'm hopeful based on what we have the possibility to do. I think when people do get together, I could go on for hours of stories of people who see an issue, a problem, and they just start to solve it and they start to grab other people and they're able to make change. And I essentially, that's kind of the only way that I've seen most change that has expanded democracy, that has made this a more just country, has happened because groups of people get together with usually bold ideas to very real challenges, and they're able to make it happen and make it work. And so I'm inspired by people all over the place who do just that. And I think if that continues, it doesn't stop. And I think that when people make that mind shift to think of themselves as civic and as owners of their community, you never unlearn it. And it's actually where my greatest hope is for this country right now, is that I think people are waking up and understanding that locally, you can get someone to be civically engaged and they will, of course, they will vote. Of course, they will contact their legislators. They will do everything that voting and elections-based people want them to. But we can do it faster, we can do it cheaper, and we can do it for a more engaged time if we focus on civically engaging people locally. So I'm very, very hopeful that we'll do it. And I think if we can get more resources into the hands of people who are working locally, I think you're going to see changes much more significant than you would in doing electoral and voting work.
And of course, you're doing it over a plate of cookies. Evan Weissman is the founder of Warm Cookies of the Revolution, which you can find at warmcookiesoftherevolution.org. Evan, thank you so much for joining Democracy Optimist.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Josh, warm cookies plus a better democracy. It sounds good, but maybe a little kumbaya. But it sounded to us as though this is really all about civic engagement. Is that correct?
I think that's right. But the framing here is really important, right? He talks about the organization Warm Cookies of the Revolution as a civic health club, right? I mentioned during our conversation, it sounded like gym membership. And he really bought into that as saying, yes, you know, you go to the gym to work out and you expect to see results in your health. And he sees that in the same way with a civic health organization. And also similarly, most of us who go to a gym, you know, we don't dread it. It's fun. It's part of our regular routine. And he wants to make that part of the regular routine as well for civic engagement. So I love this organization because I think it's so interesting how he's trying to make, you know, that word, we even, as he said, the word civic, that sounds boring, but make it really fun and really engaging. What does it mean
to be American? Thanks for joining us for this series of conversations about how elections work, about the value of your vote, and about challenges to your right and freedom to make choices at your local polling place. Find our series online at democracyoptimist.com. Joshua Douglas, writer and host, Mike Savage, executive producer. I'm Tom Martin, your series producer. Neil Kesterson, technical director and sound designer. Democracy Optimist theme song, American, by Madeline Peru. Mason Graber and Stephen Dabney, research assistants. Caitlin Douglas, graphic designer. Ella Fitzgeraldine, studio dog. Democracy Optimist is a special Eastern Standard series produced by Dynamics Productions for Richmond, Kentucky-based public radio station WEKU.